metaphorical group hug. This is my favorite, actually, of all the activities we do when we come to these things, is coming and talking to you. Because when I'm sitting there signing photographs, they keep saying, you've got to move it along. You can't talk to everybody like you do. And I can't imagine not. You know, it's not an assembly line. I mean, I get so much back from you guys. You know, if you've been around babies and you inhale over their heads, Keenan Boyle used to do it on Everybody Loves Raymond. I'm inhaling and I get an energy from you guys, which is absolutely fantastic. I really appreciate your welcome. I'm overwhelmed.
Well, it's fantastic. And it is fantastic to have you. You know, you were here at Celebration 5, and now here we are, Celebration 6. And how does it feel? I mean, you said how it feels to be back with the fans. How does it feel to be back here and on stage again and getting to talk?
Well, it's wonderful. I mean, you can't imagine. Today I heard at least 20 really beautiful women said, oh, I loved you when I was 6 years old. And really, that's pretty much my crowd, of the younger, or mentally younger people.
So, and it's, you know, everybody knows so much about your career, and everyone's so kind. Like last time, anybody see Mark last time? And so, you want to give back so much. I mean, it's almost like a joke in that you took one breath at the beginning and then you just went. You were able to just give them all these new tidbits. We think we know so much.
Well, that's it.
This information.
You might try and do it. I hope you have questions for you. But I'm trying to think of things that had never been written about in articles or in books or, you know, something special for the people that make the effort to come to something this special. Because I told you last time, you know, you're more like family. So I'm more willing to tell you things than I am a reporter from X, Y, or Z. So if you have any questions for me, I know we're going to get to
those. Yeah, we'll get to those. Now, how did it feel with your first performance? Can you give us like a little, like what was your first acting job?
Well, see, I was in the middle of 7 kids. Bill, Terry, Jan, me, Jeannie, Kim, and Patrick.
Cindy.
And my older brother was the overachiever. Oh, what did you do, like Brady Bunch?
Look, I throw them when I can.
But, you know, yeah, we always watch Brady Bunch and say, oh, that's so fake. They're never fighting, not like we fight.
Did you guys fight?
Oh, yeah. Well, we jostled for position. There was only one TV in there.
I love TV.
Or maybe Yoda's in here, I don't know. No, okay. Oh, look, they gave me a towel. What is that?
What is that? Star Wars Celebration Japan.
Yeah.
Welcome, Japan! I had no idea you were here. Oh,
well, I'll just whip it out in the crowd and I'm like Mick Jagger.
That's right. So what was that first acting job then? What was it that you did?
Well, I was just going to say that, I mean, I started in just when I was a kid, just trying to get attention. With puppets and magic tricks. I love cartoons. I love the comic strips that came to the door every day in the newspaper. But are you talking about professional?
Yeah, professional.
Let's see. I had 2 or 3 lines on the Bill Cosby show. Not the one that was popular. I was on the one where he played a basketball coach. I mean, some people remember that. And I had a line or two, and I, was finished by lunchtime. And but I was so thrilled. You know, I loved Bill Cosby as a kid. I idolized him. I used to listen to his record albums, see him on the Ed Sullivan Show and so much. And I wanted him to be. I wanted to be Bill Cosby. He was serious. How do you do? This is what you do. And you know what I learned? You know, you've got to understand it's a business. He's not supposed to come out and be this cuddly character that he created on his record albums.
Right, right.
So I was very disillusioned. But,
Now, what about Wizards? That was before Star
Wars. Oh, yeah. I did that for Ralph Bakshi, who had done the Fritz the Cat cartoon.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when I box, he's going to talk like this. Before everybody, if you ever saw Smith's cat, he played one of the pigs. You know, one of the big policemen.
No patch on Ralph Bakshi, but he was pretty much a taskmaster. I mean, I was reading the part of,
you call that a fairy? What kind of a fairy are you?
I'm not quite sure I like the way he said that. But you know, because you really, what are you going to draw on? You know, you're supposed to be an actor and draw from your life experience and whatnot. But no, I mean, it's amazing you remember that because I show up and I am John, the king of the dead, and somebody just blows me away immediately. I think Richard Romano got the main part. Oh, there it is on the screen.
There it is right there. Yeah.
But like I say, I read for the big part, and to my relief, you know, because I don't think I was ready. I mean, I think a lot of the times, you know, people make it so quickly, they don't have a chance to try it out on the road, and, you know.
Well, you did, you then pretty much followed that up with A New Hope. I mean, wasn't that one of the things then that you got into, and...
Which is that?
Star Wars, after...
I did a soap opera for 9 months. I was on General Hospital. Wow. Yeah. And again, it was before it was popular. Everything I was on was before it was popular. Because I was before Luke and Laura. It was in the old days when they had the old fashioned, we'll return to our story after these messages. And the thing was, I hated soap operas. Yeah. I wouldn't watch them on a dare. But when I got the part, then I really wanted to be, you know, I mean, it's completely different. The finished product is much different than the process of putting it together. All the actors have a great sense of humor. When they're putting it on at speed and rehearsing, they're sending it up.
I told you before, and I'll tell you again.
It's like stage, right? I mean,
yes. And you don't stop for anything. They don't care. We once had an earthquake and someone improv the brilliant line, it's all an earthquake. But we just went on. Somebody said they were doing the countdown, and 5, 4, 3, 2, and then Lucille Benson took a drag of her cigarette, she thought she'd stumped it out, and put it in the trash can behind the nurse's station, and during the scene, smoke started. And without any explanation, all the nurses just countered over to the elevator, so the stage manager could run in and put it out with it. They wouldn't stop, it was like live television, even though we were on a week delay.
Wow.
And it was really a great experience. I tell young actors, boy, if you can get on a soap opera, because you can learn to hit your marks, or you can learn about lighting, you can learn all this technical stuff, and you know, it's, like I say, it's a place to try it out and learn techniques. I really enjoyed it, even though I didn't think I would so much.
And they're not going as much now. So what about, so I just want to kind of hit some of these key moments here. So we get to A New Hope, and what is that like? Did you have any idea what was going to happen?
Well,
I know that's a silly question.
Yeah, okay,
that's that. But did you know that it was going to be a sci-fi thing? What did you know?
I'll tell you exactly what happened. So I was doing all this guest star. I was reading on Speak to San Francisco, and I'm on Canon, and I'm on, you know, all these shows that people can see on TV land. But, and then I did a bunch of TV movies, you know, I did like 5 TV movies, some of them prestigious things. Patricia Neal played my mother, and she's a brilliant actress. And I did a series called The Texas Wheelers, which is a sitcom that Mary Tyler Moore produced. And when it got canceled, Robert Englund, who was a friend of mine at the time, and he later played Freddy Krueger, he had played Freddy Krueger at the time, said, oh, have you gone off of that new Lucas thing? I said, the guy doing American Graffiti? He said, yeah. I said, well, no, what is it? He goes, it's called the Star Wars, and I think it's some kind of Flash Gordon thing. And I said, well, have you gone after? He goes, yeah, I didn't make the cut. See, actors won't tell you about a project until they're sure that they didn't get it. Then they're magnanimous and say, oh, by the way, you've been out on a Lucas thing. And I said, no. And what happened was we went in, and it was like what they call a cattle call, where it's just 50 people in a room, and they don't give you a script, they don't tell you. In fact, I went in, and it was Brian De Palma was, George and Brian De Palma were sitting at tables or desks, and he was looking at people for Carrie, the horror, high school horror picture with Sissy Spacek, and George was looking for Star Wars people. And like I said, you have no clue. They didn't talk about anything. They just said, oh, tell us a little bit about yourself. Then you spend a couple of minutes, just like I am with you, saying, well, I've got 7 kids, I graduated from high school in Japan, my dad was in the Navy, yeah. But you don't get a chance to really do a scene or anything. They just want to see how you are, you know? I mean, how do you come off? And
how did you feel coming off of that? Did you, because so often with a job that you end up booking, it's that kind of, oh man, I should have said this, I should have done that.
Oh, well, yeah, you always second guess yourself. But because it was just one of those general interviews, there was no way you could know. I had done the same thing for American Graffiti, and I didn't get a call back. I didn't, you know, I did that same routine. What was interesting was they saw me for Apocalypse Now to play the farm boy because I projected that sort of empty-headed, freshly smacked in the head innocence that I guess they were looking for. You know, I had a certain cluelessness that was very valuable. And so I know I went and I read for Apocalypse Now. Much later came the scene in the mail. 7-8 pages.
Yeah.
It's in the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. And it's with Han Solo. And I was it written for just Han or was Obi-Wan? I can't remember. All I know is I read the scene. I couldn't make heads or tails out of it. I said, is this like a Mel Brooks send-up? Because I mean, one line, and I listen, I can tell you for sure, I've never forgotten in all my years in show business. You know how long this was? Like, oh, decades ago. You know, the Han Solo is saying, hey, kid, and I said to Han Solo, but we can't turn back. Fear is their greatest defense. I doubt the actual security there is any greater than it was on Aquari or Solace. What there is most likely directed towards a large scale assault. So you can read that line? I read it out loud and I'm thinking, I better memorize this. And I have no idea if it's, you know, arch, you know, you do it like with an edge, like a Saturday Night Live sketch, or what is it? Is it a parody? Because if it's like Flash Gordon, it's anachronistic, it's like a throwback to an earlier style.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what, I remember when George was, when I finally went to do it, Harris was Han Solo, and I knew him from Graffiti, where he played Bob Falfa, and I knew George's work anyway, and I was really begging George for some. Is he sort of like being sarcastic here, or, and George sort of physically said, oh, you know, let's do it. I'm going to talk about that. I'm looking for Harrison, you know, because is he like, so I figured, okay, well, it must be normal.
Then you must get it.
Yeah, and so we did the scene as best we could. And like I said, George is like somebody that we, you know, he'll look at it and go, okay, let's do it faster or more intense. Okay, so. Through the greatest of that, I thought, well, that's just great. And then we're going to have a lot of fun. I didn't do that bad, but. I just got through it, and you know, then that's when I really, I'm driving home, I'm thinking, oh, I should have done this, I should have done that. You know, I didn't have any sense of humor, I didn't have any style or panache. But again, whatever I had, by the way, they cast us in lots. It was me and Harry, you know, I always do this, I call them Harry and Harrison. But it was me and Harrison and Carrie, and it was another set of Han, Luke and Leia. And I remember who Luke was, I remember Leia, I'm not sure about Han Solo, but what I'm saying is they told us later, they didn't mix and match. It was either Team A or Team B.
Wow.
Yeah, and George couldn't really decide, and I heard Marsha had a lot to do with saying, pick those guys.
Yeah.
So we have her to thank or blame regarding on your feelings on them. You
You know, I think Team B is telling that story somewhere in a bar right now.
It's two teams.
So then, you know, there was another film we did back then, which I loved, Corvette Summer.
Yeah.
Right? Awesome. And here, we like to mix it up. Give you a little time.
Oh my gosh, look at that.
Looking good, my friend.
That's nice. Well, so, you know,
that's Annie Potts' first film, and she was hysterical. I got to do a test with all these different Vanessas. It was actually, the name of the movie was Damning Vanessa, a fiberglass romance.
It's very 70s time.
Well, but it was, you know, you would have seen it in the papers as Damning Vanessa, and it was subtitled, which to me said, it's humorous and involves cars of some kind. This Corvette Summer, it was appalling to all of us. I mean, they retired me. We had no boat. I said, what's it, on a double bill with beach blanket bingo? It's horrible. But I got to test with all of these actors, with Nancy Allen, with Amy Irving, with all the wonderful actors. And, you know, I was no help because I tested all day long in the scene, and they'd ask me, what did you think? And I liked every girl better than the last. I would say, well, she's thought, you know, she's got this, and I didn't help them hone it down. I just kept widening the net, you know, saying, let's have them all play the part, you know? But Annie came in with that voice and that olive oil body, and I mean, she was definitely the dark horse, but boy, she's got such great innate comedic chops, you know, so
great.
Well, yeah. So what we do, it's time for a little something here that we call, well, we'll just go ahead and hit that intro. And
Star Wars Celebration 6, do a double take. Goodness gracious me.
So what we want to do is take a second look at something and kind of combine some things. I don't know if you're aware that there are some similarities between Star Wars and Corvette Summer.
There are.
So if we take
I haven't seen Corvette Summer since it was actually in the movie theater.
Yes, we can take a deeper look at it. I don't know, can we roll that tape? No, look at these guys.
Corvette Summer since it was in the movie theater, but come to think of it, I haven't seen a Star Wars movie since they were in the movie theaters.
I've never watched them at home or on DVD or
VHS. You guys ready for that?
It's true. So that's why you guys know more about it than I do. I still call them the medical droid, you call them IG-88. I don't understand a lot of these characters weren't named until they made it into toys. You know what I mean? So we call that the dustbin robot, because he looked like a garbage can, and they call garbage cans dustbins. And then the toys would come out 6 months after the movie came out, and you'd say, oh, that's, and they'd have a name for it, you know? We called him Lobster Man. Who's the one that looks like a lobster? There you go! I think he could have his name. I think he was Admiral Akbar, to give him all the respect he deserves. And by the way, I had no idea that this man, the star of comic book The Movie, also, from all the characters that he plays, he's also the Strawberry Mini Wheat. With all the respect that role commands.
I am the only man enough to be the strong.
Well, but listen, I should tell you a story. This is a true story where you should understand how to be or not be if you're trying to be in voiceover or be an actor. I was the final consideration to be Snap, Crackle, and or Pop. And I thought, this I would love a job that run, you know, and just it runs for 30 years or whatever, you know, two syllables, and you can send all three kids to college. So I was, you know, I was really excited, and they got down. I said, this must be a really important, because I did that maybe four times, and this time we met the actual executives from Kellogg's.
Yeah.
And they said, well, Mark, you will be playing the role of Pop. And just to loosen what I thought was tension in the air, I said, what, like I'm not right for Snap or Cracker? Come on! And they thought, I did not even know Snap. His daughter said, well, Pop is a leader. He's grounded, he's very intelligent. I said, ooh, did I just lay a big egg? You know, I thought that was funny, you know, because you're, come on, they're outside like this. I mean, come on. Can you really remember a distinct personality difference between stuff? Well, needless to say, I told my agent that story, and she goes, did you just assume that an advertising executive had a sense of humor? What are you, crazy? You just choked yourself out of a job, buddy. I bet you're not getting it, and sure enough, all I have to tell for that experience is this story.
It's a great story. And it's, you know, it's like that with Fred Flintstone. It'll take 4 hours to record, you know, Burning My Pebbles. Literally, 4 hours.
Well, see, and what's interesting too is when they were doing the actual cartoons, I did a couple of Flintstones, and it was Henry Corden when I did it.
Yes, he was.
The original guy.
The original was Alan Reed.
And Alan Reed. Reed.
And then yours truly got to take over after.
Who's after Henry Corden?
You! Okay, because I thought they did a different Fred and Barney for the cereal commercials than they did for the actual cartoons. Is it consistent now? It's always you?
Yeah, well, I'm told.
Oh, good. Wow, look at, you know, both of the previous Fred Flintstones were beefy guys. And that's what's astonishing about James. He can do these voices.
Okay, well, you know, it's very kind of you.
No, seriously. If you've ever seen this one-man show, it's mind-boggling.
This is not, you know,
he should be a much bigger person to be able to do that. Yeah.
This is the kind of guy he is. Thank you. Very, very sweet. Talking to my wife, Mark Hamill would say all these nice things.
No, no.
It's so
cool. I brought along a notebook in case we were, you know, at a loss for topics. Don't refer to notes on stage. I already know.
Now, hey, you know, you mentioned comic book the movie.
Lean back, back, and wings. Let's see, I'm breaking all the rules.
Comic Book the Movie was a great film that you did. You directed it. You started. We do have a scene of you and I, because this was like many years ago, and one of the first things that
we did. You know, we didn't have a budget to even have casting sessions, you know, because that would cost money. And so I relied on all of these people that I first started doing animation voices in 92. I did a show when I was a teenager, and then I worked in voiceover for 20 years. That's a good trivia question. I'll tell you what it is later. But when I did Batman, I started working with all these people that I had known for years because I'm a huge Batman.
Just a couple of years back.
In those days, I had a VCR and I would freeze frame because credits go by like, you know, you can't see anybody. But I knew Rob Paulson, I knew Jeff Bennett, I knew Tress McNeil and Maurice LaMarche and Kent Hunter Taylor. So to meet these people and work with them was a thrill. But when I said, we have to have a guy who is a movie mogul, but is a wunderkind, who, you know, you could mistake for the, you know, the errand boy or something, but who's like the head of a big company. I was actually basing it on Richard Garriott, this guy that ran the video game company that I did Wing Commander for. And I thought, James can do this because he's sharp, he's got improv skills, because we were just gonna give them the premise and then run the scenes, and the lines that he came up with were all his own. Not only did he do a letter perfect job, but later we went shot down to San Diego Comic Con. We had to figure out, once we screened the rough cut, where the weak spots were. We need more information here, we need more information here. I had James come out to my house and out in the backyard on a little bench in the garden. I said, we gotta get across this, 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 and he listened for a minute, he goes, okay, just roll. And we did, I don't know, maybe two takes. And I didn't have anything to cut to. I was gonna use one or the other. Both were perfect. I'm telling you, this guy is money in the bank, and I owe him a lot. And you can leave the bribe on the table backstage.
Well, let's take a look at this clip. I haven't seen this in a while. This is you in comic book.
Me either. I haven't seen this since it wasn't in the theaters.
Thanks.
Oh, that's great.
Thanks so much.
Sure.
And you know what? Your first date.
I don't feel embarrassed to ask you this, but you know,
okay.
You're kind of diminutive.
I do.
No, but listen, if you need some time off, I mean, people like an intern could find time off pretty easy, wouldn't they? I have a comic book. Listen, I have to tell you. See, I'm not here for the Commander Courage movie.
Sure.
Now, we don't have an actor to play Liberty Lad, mm-hmm. and you're just perfect for it. Look, you're blonde, you're blue-eyed, and the costume's not that revealing.
It's kind of muscular.
Well, but it's built into the suit. It's like, Michael Keaton.
I do some aerobic.
Oh, you do? Oh, yeah, well, then you'd be perfect, see? And you wouldn't be
having to. I said tights.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
there are flesh tights. You wouldn't have to shave your legs.
Yeah, I was
going to have to shave your legs. But if you want to shave your legs, we'd love that.
Because that's what we're supposed to see here. I met my boss. This is JT, the owner of our company. And, I don't think he'll be wearing any flesh tights today.
That was Rory Allen and Roger Rose. And like I say, everybody in the movie are voiceover people. Lori was, she's the newsreader on Family Guy. They killed her off in that hour-long episode of like Dad and Liberty, but she was on that show for like 9 years. Roger does all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, he does.
We consider comic book the movie is, you know, what Mad World was to comedians. This movie is to voiceover people because it's just chock-a-block.
Well,
the most people, the most famous people you've never heard of. Because I mean, like I say, they do these characters that you know, like, you know, better than anything else in your life. But, you know, there's nothing like the anonymity of a voiceover person. And that was a good thing for me to learn because, I mean, I go back and I do Broadway and I'd be so proud. Oh, boy, I got a nomination. Nobody knew what I did, you know, that I did Broadway. You know, because the West Coast is so far from the East Coast. I guess if you live in the Tri-State area, they go, oh, look, Mark's on Broadway. But with the voiceover thing, I really discovered something that was really helpful for me, which is that I really enjoyed performing, but I didn't need to take a curtain call. I didn't need to have the spotlight. I didn't have to have people recognize me. And that was a good thing to know, that I really enjoyed just the process of performing.
Well, you're an amazing voice actor, and you did mention Batman, and I will hear you. So the Joker, how did that part come to you? Did you just audition then?
Yes!
Batman being a series, I read about it in the Comic Buyer's Guide, and they said they were going to do 65 episodes, which is a big buy. You know, that's 13 weeks of original shows, even though they spread it out over much more than that, but 13 times 5 is 65. And they were going to model them after the Max Fleischer Superman cartoons, and they were among my favorite cartoons ever. So I knew they were going for quality. Plus, I knew they were signing people like Paul Dini, good writers, Bruce Timm. So I said to my agent, ooh, I want to be on that show. And they relayed that information, and they came back and said, okay, Mark could be in Heart of Ice. They just gave me a part.
That's awesome.
I know, and I said, well, wait a second, what is it? They said, well, it's a mystery. It's the first Mr. Freeze episode. And I read the script, and I thought, Oh, I'm not Mr. Freeze. Hi, Mr. Freeze. They said, no, Michael and Sarah's Mr. Freeze. I said, oh, okay, I'm fine with it. I'm actually the guy that pushes Freeze into the solution, so I'm sort of the villain's villain. But when I went in there, I totally just geeked out on them. I mean, I wanted them to know I knew Batman backwards and forwards. I'm peppering them with questions. Are you going to do Hugo Strange? Are you going to do Clayface? Are you going to do... villains, you know, because I thought the downfall of the Adam West was they got into a formula too quickly. They didn't really make him a detective enough, or they didn't make him do mysteries and so forth. And as much as I, as a kid, loved the TV version, I knew that this had to stand on its own. Well, to make a long story short, I went in, I did the episode, and I'm like, hey, relax, you got the part. Because I'm all over them about, you know, I'm really excited. They have backgrounds there. They have character sketches of all the characters. And what happened was, about 6 weeks later, they decided to, they were casting the Joker. And so I was given the part of Ferris Boyle, but for the Joker, they said, would you like to come in and audition? And I was so sure that there's no way that they would cast somebody that was known for an iconic good character like Luke. There's no way they're gonna stretch. They don't have that much imagination. there's no way I'm going to get this. And because I was sure there was no way I could get it, I was kind of relaxed.
Sure.
And I was replacing another actor, a wonderful actor, who when I heard his tracks, I went, oh my God, he's great, Joe.
That's pretty common in voiceover.
It is.
It does happen a lot.
Because, yes, in this case, it was a guy who had done so much for the Fox network. He was Captain Hook on Peter Pan and the Pirates. So the Fox executive said, oh, they recognize the voice.
Yeah.
Let's get another person in there. And that's why I would bring up his name, because he's a brilliant actor. It has nothing to do with talent. It's just, you know, TV executive changing their mind. But I went in and I had to loop an episode. You know, that's where you add dialogue to already pre-existing animation, which is inhibiting. You have to really, it's a technical.
And you're kind of stuck to those beats. And
yeah.
Too.
Yeah. And then you go with your mind. Now, I did read some just wild copy, what wasn't synced to stuff. But I do remember, I always tell people I went to, you know, both ends of the emotional scale. Because when I point out the parking lot, I thought, that's the best Joker they're ever going to hear. They don't hire me, they're out of their minds. Then a week later, they call and said they want you for Joker. I'm like, oh, no! I can't do that! She said, why not? I said, I wanted to play somebody that no one had preconceived notions about. I said, Clayface. I said, Dr. Hugo Strange. I never said, Joker? It's too high profile. There's no way I can do that and satisfy everybody, because everybody has an idea of how the Joker should sound.
Yeah, and now that idea is you.
And I do the laugh, or I say, thank you, Did you remember an episode of The Man Who Killed Batman? Where Joker loses his reason to be because a small town, no-name thug has apparently killed Batman. Now, I think I know it, but this is a cheat sheet in case I forget. But he delivers a eulogy. And the guy who he believes has bumped off Batman is in his presence. And Harley Quinn is there, and a couple of the henchmen are there. But he gives a eulogy written by Paul Dini that goes,
well, do you want like some moonlight?
Sure.
You want to stand, take this piece?
Yeah!
Dear friends, today is the day the clown cried. But he cried not for the passing of one man, but for the death of a dream. The dream that one day he would taste victory over his hated enemy, because it was the Batman that made me the happy soul I am today. agonized over how to thank him for that, perhaps with a cyanide pie in the face. Or perhaps an exploding whoopee cushion playfully placed in the Batmobile. But those dreams were dashed by the Weasley Gunsel standing there in our midst. This cowardly, insignificant Gonif, who probably got lucky when Batman slipped in the slime trail this loser left behind him, this disgusting mound of hyena filth who's not fit to lick the dirt from my spats.
But I digress.
The time for sorrow is past. It's time to look to a future filled with smiles. And I'll be smiling again when we take that man there and stick him in that box there and slip him into that vat of acid there. Well, that was fun. Who's the Chinese?
And we haven't even really scratched the surface of Star Wars at all. And we are on a clock here.
I'll talk fast.
But there's things that, there is something else that that we do, a little shameless plug for you.
Oh, yeah.
What you're up to now. So, roll that intro.
Time to click like and follow our guests on a shameless plug.
It's a shameless plug, Mark. You are working on something that is, much like the Joker, a departure from what we know as Luke Skywalker,
right,
and other roles that you played.
Yeah, if you have any really small ones in the audience, you might be prepared to put your hands over guys. Although, you know, with HBO and Showtime, they've probably seen a lot of gnarlier stuff. This is called Sushi Girl. Tony Todd is doing it. It's wonderful. He's a first-time director by the name of Kern Saxon, but there's other actors that like Noah Hathaway from Neverending Story, James Duvall. It's a real cult kind of Tarantino-esque picture about these low-life gangsters that are trying to figure out who absconded with the diamonds from a botched robbery. It was really out of my comfort zone, but I think a lot of times, like when I did Arrogant Heart or Room Service, when I get to play something that is not that people don't expect from me, well, like the Joker, you're much more apt to surprise people if it's out of your wheelhouse. And this thing, when I read it, just scared me. I thought, ooh, there's no safety net. It's gonna be really either, it'll be great in your best imagination, or it can go horribly wrong and you look terrible and you'll have egg on your face. And luckily for me, I think it turned out a lot better than I expected. It's coming out January 14th in theaters. Now I know it's gonna be available on video on demand. It's a small picture. Magnolia Films is releasing it, but hopefully you'll get to see it in the theater. But if you can't see it in the theater, do it on video on demand. I think it really deserves to be seen, because I'm happy with what I did, but I'm telling you, Tony Todd is masterful. I mean, it's one of his great performances I've seen.
Well, we have a masterful scene of you in action in Sushi Go, so let's take a look.
All right.
And be warned, yeah, it might be a little more.
Yeah, exactly. So let's do this.
I'm not a fishy boy. What can you say? Not to you. What's to them? What are you gonna do with those, man? Acupuncture. I'm not a fella. Are you ready? ready to stroll down memory lane. That is just a bad attitude.
I'm happy that I'm stealing the joke from Carrie, but that's actually referred to as a hair don't. You know, I thought, you know what I should do? First of all, I knew I wanted an arresting look for this guy, because he's really bad news. Psychopath and, you know, sadistic guy. I want a real arresting look, so I thought, how about if I shave my head bald? Now, I don't know where my marriage became a democracy, but my vote, my wife immediately voted no. And I forgot, Tony's bald, so it looked bad. We were two cue balls. So I said, well, let's go in the opposite direction, and that's how we wound up with Kurt Cobain on a bad day.
It looks very intense, but very cool, and I can't wait to see the rest of it. So
it is. Like I say, when I read it, I went, ooh, this is just too much. I mean, that scene is like a walk in the park. I mean, it gets even more intense. And what I did is I had my daughter Chelsea read it, and Griffin, my second son, read it. Nathan's too busy. By the way, watch Nathan's cartoons. It's called Weasel Town, and it's on YouTube. And he did them all. He didn't even ask me to do a voice, which I think I'm so proud of him. You know what I mean? I said, give me some of your merchandise. I'll put it on the table down at the celebration. No. He wants to do it on his own, so that's good. But anyway. Chelsea read it, Griffin read it, they said, you know, come on, it's like no worse than Reservoir Dogs, which it sort of resembles. And so I thought, you know what, I shouldn't read it as Mark, I should read it as Crow. I mean, that's my character. I should read it in character. And then when I read it in character, it was practically a comedy. Seriously. You know, I mean, because this guy loves violence. He really gets off on it. So it's me that's kind of squeamish. I mean, I wasn't even sure I wanted to watch that clip.
But okay, so that is going to be coming out, and we are looking forward to it. And I would love to throw it to the audience.
Yes.
Would you be willing to answer some questions?
Absolutely.
Well, then, you know, it's time to take it to the Jedi Council with a little bit of.
And now, questions from the Council.
You are our Jedi Council, and you have Master Skywalker here, who would like to ask a question. We've got Mark Daniel. Ladies and gentlemen, by the way, Mark Daniel and DJ Elliott, let's hear it for our pre-show, guys.
I'm on the third floor.
Third floor, way up there, okay.
So, tell me your name and ask your question.
Hi, my name is Neil.
I am.
First part, okay. I love your work as Skips on the radio show.
You know what I'm doing? I'm doing Lionel Stander. Remember that actor on Heart to Heart?
Yeah.
What I like about Skips is he's like deadpan. I don't even have to, I read the scripts, but I don't have to interpret.
Because he never ever does. He doesn't go high, he doesn't go low, he always goes like this.
So there's no prep, really, just like that. So what's your question?
What do you find harder, voice acting or screen acting?
Well, it's also different. People say, how's it different from the stage, how's it different from the TV? Every medium is different. And really, with animation, if I had to say broadly how it's different, is that a lot of times, because it's limited animation, you're going to want to animate your voice. You might overinterpret in certain areas in ways that you could be subtle if they could see you. And one of the things I love about voiceover is it's so liberating, because if people can't see you, you can make choices you'd never make if the camera were on you. I saw making a Mask of the Phantasm. I was appalled the way I look when I'm doing the Joker, pulling my hair and grinding my teeth, and it's appalling. But when they can't see you, it's really, it lets your imagination just fly.
Yeah, they are two different beasts. Very cool, though. Great question. Let's see, where is Mark out there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Okay. What do we got?
Mark from Tampa. Nice day, Mark. Hi, Mark. Are you here? Hi, Mark.
Hey, Mark. 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 Mark.
James.
There's an echo in here.
Mark, it's an honor to speak with you. It's such a pleasure. I saw Star Wars when I was 5 in 1977.
I see you on the screen. I don't know what you want in the audience, but...
Can you give us any insight about the rehearsal process on the three movies? Like working with Alec Guinness, for example, and even Harrison Ford. I mean,
Frank Oz.
Frank Oz.
Well, first of all, there was a physical aspect where they said they do judo classes and kendo, which is a Japanese sword fighting, and just tumbling, and you know, to get you fit enough to really do as many stunts as you could. And by the way, I should point out, Colin Skeeping was my double through all the three films. And even though he did like the flip on Dagobah, they wouldn't let me go out the glass door on whatever one that was, the middle one, I think.
But you were talking about doing a stunt just back in the green room there. We were talking about how you were kind of, you flipped back and all went.
Yeah, when we were doing that. I actually got made a member. I'm really proud. The British Stunt Association gave me a card because I did so many of my own. Of course, when you're young, you want to do everything. You get to be my age and you go, can't the devil do this? I mean,
it's just walking to the car.
No, I wouldn't be. Yeah, exactly. I really have such admiration for these people. I mean, Guinness couldn't have been more like you wanted him to be. I mean, he was the kindest, funniest, just a gentleman, and he had a great sense of humor. I remember one time we were sitting in Lady Guinness. We were in North Africa, Tunisia. She was sketching a building, and a policeman came by and saw this. He was a security guard, because we were out in the middle of nowhere shooting, and he just became really alarmed. He grabbed the sketchbook out of her hand, ripped off the page that she was drawing, and ripped it all up and was cursing us out in Arabic. And we were all astonished. And Guinness said, I wonder who that was. He had a sense of humor. I said, I don't know, unless maybe it was a local critic. Art critic. I didn't get that in. No, the thing was, she was sketching a mosque, which is taboo in that religion. So that's what he was reacting to. But I mean, Alec loved my irreverence, and he really laughed hard. Lady Guinness wasn't as fond of me as he was. But no, he was fantastic. I didn't get to work in any scenes with Peter Cushing, so I said on my day off, can I come in so I can meet Peter Cushing? Because I'm a huge Hammer movie fan. And, he was astonished how much I knew about his career. Because I asked him about working with Laurel and Hardy when he did a chunk at Oxford. I asked him what it was like standing in for, I think it was Leslie Howard in The Man in the Iron Mask, where they were doing, you know, twins, and he would do both parts and they'd cut him out of the movie. So that must have been weird. He said, no, I really thought that was great because I was able to learn my craft and know that I wouldn't be appearing in the finished film. But what a guy. I mean, when he had a cigarette, he would put on a lavender glove and smoke. And later when I got to, because I spent all day with him, like 2 or 3 days, can I ask why you do that? But I shall wish to put the nicotine smell on anyone's other person's hands. So when he shook hands, he didn't want to transfer that cigarette smell. I mean, who else would think of that? I'm certainly no American. He could do anything. He could play Sherlock Holmes, and he could play the insane Dr. Frankenstein. He was really one of the most versatile actors ever. But I know your question was about rehearsal. And the most rehearsal we got was with Frank Oz and Yoda, because A, they didn't know if it was going to work. It was before CGI. You know, I mean, there's a one shot where there's a little person in a costume so we can run along. I don't even know if that's still in the final film.
Oh, there was actually someone in it.
I think is there one shot where you see him on a distance running? Here's the thing that I was so interested, because really, you know, it's the Muppets are, he's walking along framed out. You don't see, oh, many years ever, you know, and he's walking along.
And I thought,
to me, he was instantly real. I went on a weekend, we did all day Saturday and all day Sunday, just doing Frank, and Wendy did the left hand, and Jane was on the ears and the eyes. So it was like four of us. But my point is, to me, Yoda was instantly real. I mean, I looked at him and it just worked for me. But what I thought was most interesting is there's one shot really early on where you see him get up on Luke's trunk and he puts one knee up and then they cut away and I go, get off of that. They cut back to Luke saying, get off of that, that's mine. And just the idea of him putting one knee up, the audience saw that and then immediately accepted him walking along where you never saw his feet. I mean, that's what it was explained to me later, is why they did that shot. But that was, I thought, so smart of them. Frank also is just a really wonderful, easygoing presence. You know, I just bonded in with him immediately. I mean, he was a gigantic Muppets fan from, you know, as long as I can remember. Yeah, so I know this pretty personally.
They're on Megalot. That's the best part.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Kermit, she's dressed up pretty good for
you. Yeah, so now Frank
looks a little upset.
Well, see, you're reading that into his expression. And Frank does both Piggy and Yoda, and of course, Jim did Kermit. Yeah. You know, funny thing is, when I went to go to meet the Muppet Riders, because I was going to do an episode, they took a joke that really happened for real. Chip Henson said, we really want to emphasize your talents. If you sing or dance or anything, is there anything that you'd like to do? I've been known to do impressions.
You know what he said?
He goes, great, what do you do? Jim was a sweetheart of a guy, but again, he was so sincere. I mean, really the soul of Kermit is Jim Henson. You know, he really was. We heard Jerry Nelson passed away just today. And so it was another great loss. One of our greatest friends of my life was Richard Hunt, who did Scooter. And we remained friends for years. I mean, we visited together. They were really a large part of our showbiz friends because they were in show business, but they were also down to earth and real. You could really relate to them. And
I think if you looked at the screen for a second, we might see you in
action. Oh, okay. Question to City Council.
Films as we have as fans?
Oh yeah, that's a good one because
you know, even if you go see a show tape blog, you know, you go see like a taping of the Mary Tyler Moore show, you'll never see that show the same way again. Because you've seen the sets, you know, you've seen the cameras, and it just alters your perception of that reality. Because even though I'm in the business, I'm sure it happens to you too, you watch Cheers and you just believe that. You believe they're at a bar in Boston. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't trade for anything, but a lot of times, you know, especially when I get when I see just the absolute exuberance that you display for the stuff that you like, I have to put myself back in that head and go, oh yeah. You know, I can totally see it from your point of view, even though the magic is all deconstructed for me, you know, and I have to remind myself that, that, you know, because I mean, next week I'll be in my backyard picking up after my dog. I mean, the trash can's out to the curb. And, you know, it's only in this experience where I'm somebody that's considered special. And, you know, you meet somebody online and then you realize, oh, they're really overwhelmed just because I'm here. And yet, I remember I was in the first class section one time. I saw George Harrison was on the same plane. So I gave a note to the stewardess and said, I don't want to bother him, but I will, would I love to meet George Harrison. And so she went over, she came back a few minutes later, she said, Mr. Harrison, whoa, said you could come over and say hello. So I went over there, and I'm looking at George Harrison. I was 12, 11 when the Beatles came out. At summer of 63, we heard a record we didn't know was them and they were on the Ed Sullivan Show. But my point is, I got such a lump in my throat. I thought, if I talk, I'm going to cry like a little girl. Because I got all, you know, verklempt, as they say. So I was going, I managed to squeak out, I just wanted to thank you for all the music. I just think you're fantastic, and I'm so thankful for all the music. He looked up and he went, and also that yourself. Are you ready for that? I could have gotten out of heaven right there. So I'm not trying to compare myself to somebody as great as that, but what I'm saying is, putting it in perspective, you go, okay, I kind of get this now. Because really what you want to do when things go crazy, like Star Wars, you want to reassure yourself that you're the same person, nothing's really changed fundamentally. Everybody, just the world's gone insane. That's all it is. Because, you know, you can't explain it by any rational kind of logic, but there you go.
You don't have to.
And I don't even remember what the question was anymore.
But you did great. I think we've all been really enjoying this, haven't we, folks?
Yeah!
And it is such a great way to end.
It's over already. Didn't we just start?
Day 2 of Celebration 6. And yeah, and we've like gone over the clock a few times. I know we would love to. And I hoped we covered some things that were not just about Star Wars, because you have such an amazing career. And I'm so thankful that you took the time to share it with us. So, you know, before we leave, here we go. And then a riot ensued. Now, before we leave, there's something we do, Mark, to end every interview here at Celebration 6 on the main stage. And it's, well, just go ahead and hit that that little intro.
It's a Celebration 6. Photo memory.
This is your chance to get your cameras ready. You've been taking pictures all night, right? But so Mark and I, you've had a lot of pictures of Mark, you know, he's sitting there and you're telling a story and I'm doing this, you know, and you're laughing. But we need like something that's really different for all of them to have as a keepsake from this moment. So I'm wondering, let's see. So what if you stand right there?
Stand here.
And then I'll be Yoda.
Oh, okay.
And then I'm pointing to Darth Vader over there. And then Miss Piggy. Very good. Okay, very good. Oh boy, that's good. And
throw this like a Bible bouquet.
Do it. Go for it.
I'm just gonna.
Oh. Wow. It was a.
Don't
you
think
that was great?
And I have very reasonable rates.
They're ripping it in half right now. Pieces.
What's that?
Clone Wars. It's that show on television.
Wait a minute. Doesn't Clone Wars take place between the prequels and the original trilogy? So Luke would either be an infant to 17, 18.
2 and 3.
Sorry?
2 and 3.
They want you to play somebody else on it. You can do
hey, Luke. Start a Live Right campaign.
You know, Mark, I know a few people on that show.
I've heard. This guy and Matt Lanter and Tom Kane.
Yeah.
There's so many people on that show. I mean, I've checked it out. It's really well written. It's incredibly well cast. So, you know, anything can happen, but so far, no one's asked.
Well, you know.
Let's see.
Oh, yeah, no, we're okay.
I can play like a really sickening character, like Darth Barf.
Yeah! It would be cool if you were like a bad guy on the show, wouldn't that
something
be
something like that.
Any yeah. different? Okay, well, you know, this is great. We could go all night, but ladies and gentlemen, please give me a warm round of applause.